It was another one of those small films that received rave reviews and seemed to slip under most people's radar. Until it was honored with 6 Academy Award nominations, the film Lion, directed by Garth Davis. And one of those nominations was for the film's score. And I suppose you can make a serious case it's really a horror picture, because losing a kid is every parent's nightmare. And this little boy gets lost in Calcutta and knows no one and can't even speak the language, because there are so many languages in India. So yeah. It's really a terrifying picture in many ways.
I mean, also for the child to experience that, and in a place that has so much poverty where there are so many street kids that they're callous. If you would see a child walking alone in New York, somebody would be helping him. But in India, there's so many homeless that they're callous to it, and especially children. A lot of those shots in the train station are a hidden camera with the boy really wandering around trying to get help, and nobody would help him.
No.
That is terrifying.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Isn't it? Yeah, I mean, I'm sure you saw Gandhi, yeah. And some of the street scenes there, too, were just, yeah. I mean, this is one of the most ancient civilizations on Earth, racked by some of the most desperate poverty.
Yeah, it's very impressive. I was there 2 years ago. I did a score for a film called Umrika, and the director invited me to spend a month in India, and I spent 2 weeks in Mumbai, and it was an experience I'll never forget.
Yeah.
I've traveled many places in the world, and that was one that left a really strong impression.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people are saying that is a phrase, an experience they'll never forget, that certainly applies to this picture. Dustin O'Halloran, welcome back to KUSC.
Thank you very much. It's nice to be here.
Do you remember what you thought when you first saw The Rushes, when you first saw what stage was the picture in when you first saw it?
Well, this is Garth's first film, which is very impressive. Not a lot of people realize that. And being that it was his first film, I think he was waiting to make sure that he was making the right decision to find his composers. And he had temped a lot of our music, Hauschka and I's music, in the temp. So when we saw the first edit, it was actually pretty close to final cut. So we had this film that had a lot of our music in it already, and I watched it, and I obviously it was so emotional and so powerful, and I just thought, wow, this is one of the best films I've ever been asked to work on, and maybe it's just one of the best films I've seen in a long time. So I was really honored to be a part of it, and for Hauschka and I to work on it. It was just, so we came in at the final stage, and we had to jump in. They had all been living with the film for a couple of years. So we had to just kind of really just jump into this big, epic, emotional story.
Yeah, well, that's what composers have been doing since the 1930s, the last guy that gets on the gig.
Well, if you can get in early, it's great. But sometimes directors need to make sure it's the right fit. And the one thing that Garth, he took so much time to choose everybody that worked in his film. And he never rushed his decisions. And you can feel it in the film that everybody was selected through a very careful idea of what they would bring to the film. And so once he asked us, sometimes the process can take a while before you actually sign the papers and you start. And literally from the first phone call to maybe a week and a half later, he had no hesitation. He just said, do you want to do it? And as soon as we said yes, a week later, we were working on it. He knew we were the right people.
Thank you. the cue called Orphans. Music from Lion, one of the five pictures nominated for an Academy Award in the music category. One of the composers, Dustin O'Halloran, is my guest tonight. We're playing the score for Lion here on 91.5 Classical KUSC. So tell me about your collaborator.
Yeah.
The German composer named Hauschka. Mm-hmm. The only Hauschka I know of was an 18th century Czech composer. Is he a fan of his?
Because... Oh, I don't know him.
Okay.
All right. I only know the skin products.
Oh, okay.
Dr. Hauschka. Well, it's an interesting story because I was living in Italy, and in 2007, he came to play a concert. I was living near Bologna, and he came to play a concert in this town called Ferrara, which is about an hour away from where I was living. And at the time, I was working on some music for Sofia Coppola's Marie Antoinette. And Brian Reitzel, the music supervisor, wanted to explore prepared piano. I was doing my own research and doing my own experiments and some recordings. And then I heard about Hauschka, my friend Francesco Donadello, who records a lot of my music and mixes a lot of my music, told me about him. So we go up there, and I see his concert, and it's great. And he's so good with this prepared piano that it was like one of those moments where you're inspired and then equally deflated, because I had been trying to work on prepared piano, and when I saw how deep he was and how great he was at getting the sounds, I realized, okay, I just have to just put that aside because I don't want to feel like I'm copying him or anything, because he's just so good at it. And we sparked up a friendship and then ended up just becoming great friends. And he's a wonderful guy, super creative. And I think we've just shared a lot of great inspiration with each other. And we ended up recording on the same label, which sort of started a lot of this sort of what they're calling neoclassic or new music. It's a record label called Fat Cat from the UK, and they released Max Richter and Johan Johansson and me and Hauschka, and they were sort of the first people to really pioneer that, at least find a new audience for it.
Sure,
you know?
Sure.
And so we've known each other for a long time. Hauschka went to play a show in Melbourne and ended up meeting Garth. And Garth came to him and said, I really love your music. I'm working on this film. Could you imagine to work with another composer named Dustin O'Halloran? So he had no idea that we knew each other.
I see.
And so it's kind of, and Garth has this a bit of serendipitous spiritual connection. So it somehow made sense that it was just meant to be.
Apparently.
Yeah.
With a cue called School. And who names the cues?
I think we both came up with names.
I see.
There were always working titles that you then have to give them more interesting names than 1M23.
Exactly. And for people who don't know, the reason that film cues are given names is for copyright purposes and for royalties and so forth.
Yeah.
And, well, for one, Danny Elfman got so sick of doing that. And he thought it was so stupid that in every picture he's ever done, there's a cue called The Final Conflict, even if there's no conflict at all in the picture.
Uh-huh.
He's always got a cue called The Final Conflict. And it drives the bookkeepers mad with rage because,
oh, yeah.
Wait a minute, is this the final conflict from Batman or, and so forth.
Yeah, I guess he's having a little bit of a laugh there.
It's a very quiet score, and it's a very slow score.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also, I don't want to say monochromatic, but it's basically piano, mm-hmm. strings, and a bit of electronics here and there.
Yeah.
And it follows the first and only law of film music, which is serve the picture.
Yes.
And it serves it precisely.
Yeah. It was, I think that our biggest challenge with this film was that Garth didn't want it to feel like film music in the traditional sense, and he didn't want it to overpower the picture as well. He didn't want it to overpower the emotion and give it anything that didn't feel authentic. And so what our work was really trying to capture performances, which had some authenticity to it, as well as reduce the score to just what it needed. Because every time we experimented to make it bigger, it seemed to degrade the quality of the emotion in some way. Instead of actually amplifying it, it had the opposite effect. And so we found that by reducing it, it actually brought out a lot of, it helped the acting, it helped the emotion be more sincere. And there's so much sincerity in the film. The story is a true story. Everyone get connected with it in so many ways. Nicole Kidman isn't a, you know, she has adopted children, and people drew so much from their own experiences and put it into the film. And I think that Hauschka and I, we did the same. I think our, perhaps what Garth was attracted to in our own music that we release is the sense of longing. And the film is a real study in longing. Even from the beginning to the end, when Saru is a boy, he's longing to find his home. He's longing to be reconnected with his mother. And when he's older, he feels how separated he is. And he feels the longing of finding his home again. And he's growing up in this middle-class family in Tasmania. And how do we create the emotions? We don't overtake it. And we give space for the people to watch it. Because I think what people connect with in the film is not just that it's an incredible story, but it makes them reflect on their own lives as well, and their own connections and their own losses. And it's something that is very universal, that resonates with everybody. So we found we would record a piece of piano on a grand piano, and it was too big, it was too beautiful. And then we would go and record it on a small upright piano with pieces of felt between the hammers. And then it had this fragility and this quality that would bring more emotion to what we needed. And the challenge with that was that if they mixed the score too low, it would have lost the delicateness and the detail. And we were really happy that it was mixed very well into the picture. That even if there's really quiet, felted piano moments, you hear it, you hear the hammers, you hear the textures. And this is, I think, with recording and music, something that maybe a lot of film music loses, the idea that actually roughness in the sound or the way it's recorded can also transport a lot of emotion. And I think working on my own records and always recording, and Hauschka as well, we both learned that, where you can take a simple piece of music but give it a whole nother dimension by how you record it. Doing a really close mic on the strings, you hear the bow, you hear the humanity in it, and I love that. And clean doesn't mean better. Recording in a beautiful studio doesn't mean it's better.
No, it doesn't. Yeah. It doesn't. I'm also a great believer in composers who begin and remain performing musicians themselves.
Yeah.
Because it's absolutely vital.
Well, all of the pianos is recorded by Hauschka and I. Yeah. And one thing that people may not know is that most of the takes are single takes. And one of our biggest challenges was the last scene in the film, or one of the last scenes, where he finally finds his home on Google, then he tells his girlfriend, he lets his adopted mother know, he gets on a plane, he lands in India, he's in the train, he arrives in the hotel room, he goes to find his home and walks through the corridors of his old village, and that whole take is a single piano take.
Yes.
And we did it to picture, and it took about a day just to do that scene, because there's so much push and pull, and we didn't want to map it out or do any click tracks or anything, because we wanted it to feel really organic and really inside the picture. And I honestly didn't know if I was going to be able to do it, because I was a little too quick in one part, it wouldn't land in the right, you know, there's a lot of different sections and a lot of movements that needed to be aligned with the picture, and it was so hard. But it was one of those moments when we got it. I was so happy that we chose to do it like that, because it gave it this organicness that we would have never been able to accomplish if we had mapped it out with click tracks or things like that.
Bravo.
Thank you.
Took some guts.
One of the things I love about old film scores is how rubato they are. And if you ever listen to John Williams' Close Encounters of the Third Kind, it's when you go back and listen to it now, you realize how modern scores, you can almost tap out the beat, and you realize they're all kind of locked in a grid in a way, and how unmusical that is, and how the push and the pull add so much energy and life to a score. And it's not easy to do, and it's I've never done it with an orchestra yet, but I think that when you hear that score, there's these rushes to an ending, or how quickly the tempo changes and how exciting it feels.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, what people forget, and maybe some people don't know, John was one of the great studio pianists in history. Mm. And a guy who, before he even considered becoming a composer, you know, was so steeped in everything that makes music music, which is to say, breathing.
Yeah, the breath of music is so important to film music, I think. And it's something that it's hard when we're in a modern day where people are using temp music, where 50 years ago that wasn't the case. People were recording scores, and they didn't have to fight with a tempo that was already laid out before with another piece of music.
And worse yet, they didn't have to fight with the director's mind, because you get so used to the temporary music that they have to put in to show it to producers and show it to anything, and even to help the director himself. But they get so wedded to that that getting them away from the old temps. Well, this is interesting that the temp score for this picture was your own music, so maybe it's a little easier.
Well, that really helped, because it gave us a sense of what he needed from us, or why he chose us. And even if the music changed quite a bit from the temp, at least we had a really good starting point of a feeling or a some texture or something that we could pull from, and that was really helpful.
Yeah, I would think. That is Dustin O'Halloran. We're talking about his score for Lion, one of the five scores nominated for an Academy Award this year. You're tuned to 91.5 Classical KUSC. So what's the actual division of labor between you and Hauschka? Or is it something so tenuous and so... tenuous is not the right word. It's something so fluid that it's difficult to say.
Well, we started... At the time, I had just set up my studio in Los Angeles, and he lives in Dusseldorf, Germany. So the first month, we basically worked in our own studios, and we just thought it would be good to just get into the picture in our own way, and find our own way to connect with it. And every day we were kind of sending files back and forth, and we were also sending things to Garth. And so we had a kind of 24-hour, because I was in the day, and then I would talk to him at night, and he would start his day. So we had this 24-hour composing going on, and just sending stuff back and forth, sending stuff to Garth, getting feedback. So the first month was more about finding the elements that were working and what we needed to work with. And then he came to Los Angeles and stayed with me for a month in my studio. And we pretty much did all of the music that remained in the film in that month. We took a lot of the ideas that we'd been working on, but then really brought it together and really combined everything. And I think if we hadn't spent a month together, it wouldn't feel as cohesive as it was, because there were just moments where he was playing and I could say, oh, hey, what about just taking those pieces there and let's develop this? Or he would do the same for me. Or I would play something with him and it would change the direction of what we were doing, and vice versa. That was really important to how cohesive the score was, is just spending that time in a room with him. And I don't think I could have done that with many people, because we're good friends and we've known each other for a long time and we've toured, and I was at his wedding. And so we had a very relaxed, good atmosphere in the studio, and we trust each other and we don't have an ego. I mean, we really wanted the best for the film. And that was, I think, what always led us, is we wanted to make it the best for the film that we could.
Yeah. And so indeed you did, as we're hearing. So this is your first nomination, so to ask a silly question, how did you feel?
It's pretty exciting and unbelievable, because I never really thought I would ever be nominated for an Oscar, so kind of overwhelming when you find out. And then the first thing you do is you call your mom.
Of course.
And now she is officially the most excited person.
Yes, yes. Is she going to be at the...
Yeah, I'm going to bring my mom. And this is the perfect film to bring your mother to.
I guess so. Where does your mom live?
She lives in Venice.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, in not Venice, Italy.
Oh, this Venice?
Venice, California.
Okay, well, then she's right in the neighborhood.
Yeah, yeah. We grew up in California.
Yeah. So you got your tux all picked out?
I have my tux. I've been getting some practice. We were at the BAFTAs a few days ago, so that was pretty exciting. And getting used to the tux situation.
And I would think one of the big kicks is also meeting the other composers.
Yeah, and I have to say this year has been such a great year for film music. I really love all the scores, and all of the composers are just really good people, and you can see how much hard work, and they're coming from different places. Not everybody wanted to be a film composer. Mika Levy has been doing her own music for a long time, and I think she's really talented. I really like a lover score that she did for Under the Skin. I think it's really creative. And also Nicholas, who did the score for Moonlight. He's such a nice guy, and I really love his score as well. And Justin did a great job with La La Land, the one that's sweeping all the awards. And Newman is, he's a legend. So it's cool. It's nice that there's a lot of new people, and everyone's, I think we're all sort of in the same state of shock a little bit, that we're all there. And it makes it fun. It makes it gives it a good energy.
I would think so. And I think this may be the first time that two of the Oscar-nominated composers were Harvard graduates.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Justin and Nicholas are both.
I did not go to school.
Well,
I skipped that part.
Yeah. Well, see, neither did Beethoven or Bach or Brahms.
Right. Oh, well, that's good. Good to know.
Maintaining. I don't want to say the tension, but there is, for such a quiet, gentle score, there's an underlying tenseness in the whole thing.
Yeah.
That it never completely relaxes, and it must have been so tough maintaining that.
There's a few different approaches that we took with the score, and one of the feelings of tension is also this sort of what Garth described as the spiritual timeline. And it was
we should say who Garth is.
Garth Davis, the director.
Right.
And it was something that we spoke a lot about, because there is a very linear timeline that the film follows. And the film does have some flashbacks, but it's not a typical biopic that really relies on it. It really goes, the first part of the film is in real time. And so we're following this timeline musically, but then there was also a lot of... There's a spiritual timeline, which is the pull that he's feeling to his mother, and this connection that he feels, and this sense that she's always there, and the sense that in the second half, there's these moments when he sees his brother as if his brother is just haunting him. And so, especially the second part of the film, and there's a haunted feeling. This boy is just haunted always by his experience in the beginning of being alone in the second part. And so... We did a lot of experiments. Everything is generated from organic sources, and some of it is generated from the prepared piano that Hauschka did. And we created a lot of sounds from that that don't sound anything like the piano. And a lot of this sort of haunting tension is created either from taking strings and manipulating them, pitching them down. And I think there's some stuff that we treated very purely and recorded very purely, and there's other things that we did and did a lot of manipulation to create new sounds, but that would give it an undercurrent of not necessarily tonal or thematic, but just something that you could feel in your chest, feel in your belly, some really low subs and things that would just, taking a string section and pitching it an octave down so it just feels otherworldly, things that you just feel, but maybe they're not... They're just more instinctual, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. And there was virtually nothing in the way of trying to duplicate Indian music itself, which I think was which is a very wise thing to do.
Yeah.
Because this is not about India, and it's not about an Indian kid.
No.
It's about something much more universal.
Absolutely. And Garth was very clear about that from the beginning. And the fact that he asked us, that was clear. And we never had that discussion. We never had the discussion of trying to create any Indian music. And I think it would have, you know, it would have cheapened it in a way. Not that Indian music is that. It's just that that's not the story we were telling. We weren't trying to bring that out, and we were trying to create a more universal feeling. And it was just about finding the right whatever worked. And as the score progresses into the second half, it becomes more contemporary with the shift in time. But then there's still these rough elements of the prepared piano in it, as if he's always retaining that part of him. And it was something that worked very well. And I think that that's what Hauschka's been doing for a really long time. And I think Garth chose both of us very well to bring out these parts.
I'll say.
Yeah.
So what's next after this? I mean, I would imagine it's not the kind of thing that you can just put away quickly.
No. I have a feeling that this will be one of the special films that I get to work on in my life. And I think it's so rare for everything to come together, because there's always this element of chaos in filmmaking, because you have schedules and things that have to line up, and maybe people aren't available and they work with a different actor or a different composer. Maybe we wouldn't have been able to do it, and it will come out a different. I don't think I've worked so hard to make every cue exactly the best it could be. And Garth has this way of bringing this out in everybody. He gave everybody a really safe place to put up more of themselves into the film. And it was never in this, I mean, filmmaking can be very critical. I mean, there's so many levels of critique that it goes through, and sometimes that can make you withdraw your own self, because if you put so much into a cue and then in 2 seconds it's taken out, it can be a really, it's hard to pick yourself up again. And he had a great way of always making us feel that we were really important to the film and needed. And so that if something wasn't working, that he gave us so much trust to help us find it. And he didn't try to direct us in a way where he was telling us what we should do with the instruments and how we did it. He left it up to us. And I think that that's what helped us make a good creative score.
Yeah, obviously.
Yeah.
Obviously. Well, Dustin O'Halloran, congratulations.
Thank you.